Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for a Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Amy Newmark, the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul. Amy and I will be discussing the best practices and strategies from their latest edition, The Multitasking Mom's Survival Guide. The book is a collection of inspiring and entertaining stories for multitasking moms sharing tips and pointers to help others organize their time more efficiently to meet the busy demands as today's mothers. Unfortunately, Amy is not able to be with us live this morning. However, I do have our pre-recorded interview for everyone to listen to. So without further delay, here is my interview with Amy Newmark. Good morning, Amy. It is a pleasure to have you on the air with me this morning on FMMK Talk Radio. How are you doing?
I am great. I'm really excited to talk about this particular book because it's so close to my heart.
Wonderful. I enjoy reading this book. It's really funny. It really doesn't kind of connect with me, but I do have so many moms in my life, and reading this book really helped me to understand some of the things they went through in raising their kids. Multitasking Mom Survival Guide is insightful and entertaining read. The stories are very inspiring and hilarious as well. Thank you for sharing and congratulations.
Well, thanks. You know, I made the book because I had figured out some really good things as I was raising my kids, and I had found ways to make it so much easier to raise my kids and have a nice, stable relationship with them where I wasn't getting annoyed with them and they weren't getting annoyed with me and they didn't view me as controlling, et cetera. And yeah. I realized when I talked to my friends that not everybody had these same strategies. And so over the years, I was sharing some of my parenting tips with friends and even people I met in business. And then people started calling me and saying, oh, that thing you told me about teenagers, that transformed my relationship with my teenagers. Thank you so much. And I didn't even remember that we had had the conversation. So then I thought, I'm just going to write these things down. I'm going to make a whole book with the best advice from all of the moms out there, because all of us have these great ideas and we can put them together in this multitasking mom survival guide and pass on our best advice, our best practices, what really worked for us to the moms who are coming up behind us, because women do love to share. I mean, we're all very good about sharing our advice with each other. And so that was the genesis for the book, and I had a blast putting it together because it was so much fun reading about the other moms and their advice and then all the funny stories and the disaster stories and everything else. So this is a book. I'm sitting here like with a big grin on my face because it was just such a happy experience putting this book together.
Well, that's wonderful. I know this much. I mean, there's really not enough books to help parents be parents, and especially in today's world of multitasking. This book is just perfect for people that want to look for any tidbits that will help them. And also, if nothing else, give them the opportunity to see, hey, they're not alone out there, that there are people out there that are making things work, and this is a wonderful guide for them.
Yeah. I'm really, really pleased with this. I wish I had had this book when I was raising my kids because it would have been so helpful to me instead of having to develop some of these theories over time. I would have loved to have read this then, and also because a Chicken Soup for the Soul book consists of 101 stories, everything is in little bits, and so it's easy for a mom to pick it up and, you know, read one story while she's waiting in the carpool line, put it down, pick it up again the next day, read one more story. It's bite-sized morsels for busy moms.
Right. You got it so well organized, and one of the sections, actually, which is quite interesting, is something that moms all over the world sometimes feel guilty about, which is feeling guilty. Do I love my child enough? Have I done enough? So tell us a little bit about
moms
that. Why
always
did you
feel
choose
guilty.
That? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because moms all feel guilty. Every single mom feels like she should be doing more. She didn't do that right. She should have done X, Y. I mean, I remember when my kids were both in college, so my SAT days were behind me, I remember getting these brochures in the mail from these different SAT review courses because the brochures mm-hmm. kept coming. And every time I got one, the first thought I would have was a feeling of guilt where I'd say, oh, maybe I should have used that place for the SAT review. Maybe I made the wrong decision. I mean, I was still feeling guilty just about which SAT review course they should have taken, and they were already in college. I mean, moms have unbelievable amounts of guilt that they can produce over everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a whole chapter about feeling guilty to try to help moms not feel so guilty, because that's really, really important.
You wrote a wonderful intro for the book. So please tell us a little bit about that, because I thought that just truly summarizes what this book is all about.
So I started off my introduction with a quote, which I feel is a very good representation of what it feels like to be a multitasking mom. And so here's the quote. It's from Quentin Crisp, and it says, "You fall out of your mother's womb, you crawl across open country under fire, and drop into your grave." And I think that's what it feels like to be a mom, because the demands are so relentless, you know, and you never seem to catch up. You're always tired. You're definitely under fire.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended the introduction with another quote from Chekhov, and that quote is, "Any idiot can face a crisis. It's day-to-day living that wears you out," which, of course, yeah, getting through every single day of raising children and maintaining a home and working or volunteering and taking care of a husband or a partner and the dog and the cat and everybody that wants a little bit of your time, it is that everyday living that can wear mm-hmm. you out. So what I did in the intro is I tried to give moms out there a little guided tour of the book so that they would understand mm-hmm. that there are different sections for different times of their life, different issues that might come up. So the first chapter in the book is called Making Me Time, and it's all about the importance of making me time, because otherwise you can really lose your identity and stop feeling mm-hmm. like you're a person, and you start feeling like you're just the servant to the whole family, mm-hmm. and it can really make you have a lot of resentment. So you have to carve out that me time. I used to try to carve out from 10 p.m. to 11 p.m. each night. Mm-hmm. Whatever I was doing, I would stop it at 10, and from 10 to 11 was my time to read or watch television. But that hour was for me, and if the kids woke up during that time, I was not happy, because that was my only hour of the whole day that was for me. And I have another chapter about feeding the family, because that's a big source of stress, getting breakfast, lunch arranged, dinner on the table every night. And then I have other chapters where I share a lot of humor. I put in a lot of really, really funny stories, mostly about moms having disastrous days, you know, where you always laugh afterwards. And I also put in a chapter about housework, because people have to just accept a little bit of dirt. You know, it's not going to mm-hmm, be perfect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I also put in a chapter about what you can learn from your kids, because it is amazing sometimes what kids will say that will be so wise. And then I have a chapter for women who are trying to juggle a career with motherhood. And then, of course, our feeling guilty chapter, and then another mm-hmm. chapter about slowing down, and not just the mom slowing down, but slowing down for the kids, too. Like, the kids can feel very pressured and overscheduled as well, even though it might have been their idea to sign up for four different after-school activities. They're actually relieved when they have a day off from all of that. So we have a whole chapter of women talking about how they slowed down themselves and their kids and maybe dropped some of those activities and gave their kids more leisure time, like we all remember having when we were kids.
Wonderful. The book obviously touches all types of mom. You can be a stay-at-home mom. You still have to do different things because of the challenges that you may have with different kids and different obligations that you have. And then obviously you have single parents out there. And then, of course, you have those high-powered moms that are on the go all the time. Does this book help those moms that are always on the go?
Yeah, this is for everybody. This is for the mom who has one incredibly well-behaved child but still somehow feels guilty, doesn't feel like she has enough me time, et cetera, all the way up to the mom who has five kids of all different ages and has a career and has to commute an hour to her job, et cetera. I mean, this meets the needs of all of those moms because every mom, no matter what her situation, is doing the hardest job that you could possibly do.
And it is a lifetime job.
It is. You're always raising your kids. My parents are in their 80s, and they still worry about me. I mean, it's so funny. I remember one time leaving their house. I was in a convertible, and I put the top down, and then they were all worried, like, well, you know, like, be careful, because now you're in a convertible, and people will see you and call us when you get home. And, you know, like I was a 16-year-old, so I called them when I got home. I mean, you never stop worrying.
Right, right. Will this book help fathers appreciate the mother of their children more?
I think if the fathers take the time to read it, although I don't expect them to, because I know how fathers are, but I think that when they read some of these stories and realize what's going on all day long while they're not paying attention. I mean, fathers, I mean, there are some fathers who are very involved, but most fathers don't do nearly as much of the work at home as the women do, even if the women have equally demanding jobs or obligations outside the home. Sometimes the women are even helping the father's elderly parents, and somehow that fell on the daughter-in-law instead of the actual son as well. So I think if fathers read this book, they'll understand how much their wives are juggling. But I don't have high hopes they'll read it. I really wrote this book for other women. I really felt like I was having a conversation with the other women out there who are coming up behind me. And, like, I will be insisting that my own daughters and daughters-in-law read this book when they have kids, because I think it will help them so much.
This book will make a wonderful gift to the husbands because there are sensitive men out there, you know.
That's true. That's true. I would love it if fathers read it, but I will just be happy if all the mothers read it and maybe pass on some of the cool stories to the dads. You know, like, you got to read this one. It's so funny or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Wonderful. You mentioned a little bit about the enjoyment that you got from putting the book together. What is the most favorite part about putting the book together, in the sense of, I know, gathering the stories and so forth, but a lot of times there's something that really truly echoed out there to let you know that, hey, this is really, really cool that I've never even realized that this happens.
I think for me, and now this is going to sound like I'm just talking about me, but, oh well, I was the author. For me, it was really gathering all of the great tips from the other moms started reminding me of all the different things that I did raising my kids and the things that my kids have told me they're going to do for their kids. You know, like, my kids are always telling me now, like, oh, Mom, that thing you did with coupons, that was so cool. I'm going to do that with my kids. Or, Mom, the fact that we hardly watched any TV, I'm going to do that with my kids, too. Like, my kids have a half-brother from my first husband's second marriage, and they'll tell me, you know, like, he watches too much television. He should be the way we were. I don't remember them telling me when I was not letting them watch a lot of television that was the right thing to do, but now they really appreciate it. But it was really good kind of reviewing my own 20 years of having the kids at home and raising them, and it was a wonderful trip down memory lane, and I just had a great time thinking about all those tips that I could share, and then our editors did too. We were all talking about different strategies we had about raising our children, and we were putting them together in this book.
Wonderful. As usual, I've selected several stories from the book as talking points for this morning. Please give us a short rundown of these stories. They are wonderful stories, and obviously, again, I probably have about 13 stories, and this is just the gist of what a wonderful book this is. So people need to go out there and just buy this book and read the rest of the, let's see, what, about 88 more stories that goes after this interview. So let us start with the first one, making me time.
Yeah, so I always start a Chicken Soup for the Soul book with a really strong story that I think is extremely important. And so I started this multitasking mom survival guide with R is for Randy, and this story really struck me because this woman, Randy Mazzella, was given a necklace by her friend for her birthday, and the necklace had an R on it for Randy, the mom's first name. And the mom looked at it, and for a moment, she didn't know why her friend had given her a necklace with an R on it, because Randy's children started with a J and an A, and she was used to wearing things that had a J and an A on them for her kids. I mean, she kind of forgot that she was her own person, and then it was like an epiphany, and she put on the R necklace, and then she said, I have to figure out who R is, because I have been so busy being A's mom and J's mom. And she said, I realized that to be a good mother, I also had to be my own person, not just someone who solely existed to take care of other people. And she said, "My not having my own identity was making me a little boring, frustrated, and embarrassed." And so she carved out some me time, and she started going to spin class. She started doing more volunteer work. She made a monthly date to go to the movies with a friend. She took a writing class online. She started doing all these things. And, yeah, even though that meant she was doing less for the family, she actually became a better mother as a result. And so I thought that that was a really important reminder to moms to be true to themselves and remember that they are people. They're not just staff.
So true. And what I like about the story is that it's so easy for us to, even in relationships, that is, whether you're a mom or a caregiver, that you sort of lose your identity after a while if you're not careful.
Yeah, it's true. Caregivers have the same problem. Or even having a job. Let's say you don't have kids, but you have a job, and all of a sudden you do everything for the job, and you forget to carve out time for your own hobbies or your own passions. It's a very important life lesson. It just happened to have come up in this context of motherhood, but it could be applied to all of life. You have to carve out me time no matter what you're doing.
So true. The next one is When Mom Gets Sick by Patricia Lawrence. And this is a wonderful story in a way.
Yeah, so every mom knows this. Every mom knows that you cannot get sick when the rest of your family is sick, right? You're not allowed to be sick. So every kid is throwing up. Your husband is throwing up. The dog is throwing up. You're not allowed to be throwing up. And if you do happen to throw up, as Patricia Lawrence said in her story, the moment you throw up, you get dressed and you go on as if nothing happened. And she just, it's very, I think it's a funny story because she just talks about the fact that you don't even have time to get sick. And I know a lot of moms, even if they do get sick, they have to wait till everybody else is better again and then they can finally get sick, right, when it's all over. And then I thought this was so funny. Patricia Lawrence quotes from the Bible. Okay, so this is hysterical. She says that here's the proof that mothers weren't supposed to get sick. And she goes to Matthew 8, 14 to 15. And here's the quote. When Jesus came into Peter's house, he saw Peter's mother-in-law lying in bed with a fever. He touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she got up and began to wait on him. So even in the Bible, the mother wasn't allowed to be sick. She had to get up and serve the son and his friend.
Immediately,
who happened to be Jesus.
Right.
I chose this story because it reminded me of my mom back in Malaysia. I mean, growing up, I cannot recall how many times she really got sick. I remember vaguely one time. I remember that she was not feeling well, and my grandmother had to come to the house and stay with us for a week to be the cook for the family. And then that's it. I'd spend my 18 years with her in Malaysia. I can't ever recall the time that she got sick. Of course, my dad, myself, and you're right, my sister, we get sick all the time. And mom's always there.
Yeah, I know. Moms are really strong, and if they are sick, they just power through it. I remember when I was a kid, my mom didn't get sick, or at least she didn't show it. And then one time she was so sick because she was so run down that she got pneumonia and had to go into the hospital, and we were in shock.
Like, that
didn't happen. Mom never got sick, but she had been working so hard and was so selfless and not caring for herself that she actually got pneumonia and was hospitalized.
Right.
So that's why this is in the chapter called Making Me Time. Got to take care of ourselves, aren't these moms.
That's true. And that's why I feel like some of the stories, even for the guys, for the father or anyone for that matter, looking back at their moms, should appreciate stories like this.
Yeah, that's true. I think people do. I mean, I noticed my kids, by the time they got into their early 20s, they were very appreciative of what I had done for them raising them. They really started to get it. But I know they won't fully get it till they have their own kids.
Yeah.
And then I'll be laughing.
There you go. That's the time you need to write a book about being grandparents.
Yeah. But we do have one. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul Grandmothers. And that was a lot of fun to put together also. That came out a couple of years ago.
Interesting. Well, you see, when you're one, that is even more exciting.
Oh, my gosh. I know. It completely changes women when they become grandmothers. I've seen it. People go crazy. They really do. So, yeah, the first of our four children just got married. So, and we have another one getting married soon. So we're on our way.
Congratulations. The next story is very interesting. It is from you, Feeding the Family, Everything But Cooking. So tell us about that.
Okay, so I was a working mom, although I always worked from home, except for 2.5 years that I commuted to a job. But I managed to always work from home because I was a Wall Street analyst. And I managed to do that from home, and I had a stock quote machine in the house and all of that. And I was a pretty super mom, except for one thing. I didn't cook anything. But that was because my first husband was the second of four sons, and his mom decided that he was going to cook. So he cooked everything, and I just did the cleanup. I mean, I didn't even know how to make coffee. He made coffee for me every morning. I mean, that was just his thing. He did the cooking, and he was so good at it that I wasn't even going to try because he was great at it. But I couldn't do anything. I couldn't even make iced tea. I mean, this was before the Internet, and I remember looking up how to make iced tea, and I put a pan on the stove with water in it. I mean, I was reading directions for how to make iced tea, and then I put the tea bags in, and it said drape the the little labels over the side, so I draped the labels over the side. But I had a gas stove, so then I turned on the flame, and every one of those tea bags, the labels caught on fire because they were all dangling over the side right into the flames. So, yeah, that was me. That was me trying to cook back then. But then I got divorced, and all of a sudden I had to learn how to cook. And I actually found out that I could cook as long as I didn't have to follow a recipe. I guess I don't like following instructions. And so I started cooking all the time. And in the beginning, the kids were literally going outside and looking for takeout containers in the garbage because they couldn't believe that I was cooking. But it just shows that even in your 40s, you can develop new skills if you have to. Moms are capable of growth and development. Even when it seems like it's all over and they're fully baked, they're not.
So true. I chose that story as well. I love it in terms of it reminded me about what my mom used to tell me over the phone over and over again because I came to the United States when I was 18 and my mom constantly reminded me, you know that your sister can't cook, right? She can't even boil water. You remember when we were growing up and I told her to cook rice for us for one of our dinner meals and she said she's not hungry? She kept on reminding me that story. It's really interesting that it takes a while for someone to master certain things. Of course, now she's a wonderful cook, but back then growing up or in the early years of marriage, she doesn't cook because my mom cooked and she didn't have to worry about all that.
Yeah, I think we're all capable of cooking. It's not really that scary. You just have to find your own personal style. For me, as long as I have olive oil and an onion, I can cook because I have to start everything by sautéing an onion. And then I just start throwing stuff in from the refrigerator, like whatever I have. I'm basically like, everybody get in the pot. You over there, you look good, get in the pot. And everybody goes in the pot, and it's always delicious.
See, you should live in Louisiana. We have a dish called gumbo. Everything goes in it.
Yeah, I just look through the refrigerator and I see what's in there. And as long as I started with olive oil and a sautéed onion, I'm good. Everybody goes in the pot with that sautéed onion, and it's always really delicious. And then it can be eaten alone. It can be poured over pasta. It can be put over rice. So that's what I do all the time. I really just look through the refrigerator and throw things in.
Wonderful. The next section is called Sharing Good Advice. And you have a couple of stories here that are just totally wonderful. The first one is Privilege Coupon. I love this concept that you have put together, and I think that it will certainly help lots of moms out there.
Yeah, this chapter has two of my best practices that I came up with. And these were things that other moms weren't doing. And I've had so many moms ask me to email them my files for these coupons. So I'm a pretty analytical person. I was a Wall Street analyst. I always like to analyze everything. I always like to try to figure out what motivates people, because if you can figure out what's motivating somebody, you can figure out how to solve a problem or make them happy. Mm-hmm. And so raising my kids and seeing, you know, what would get them upset and what would cause temper tantrums when they were little and all of that, I realized that control is a huge issue. Because, you know, we take little kids, we, like, throw them in the back of the car and say, okay, we're going, and then we don't even tell them where we're going. You know, and then you'll hear a little voice saying, well, where are we going? You know, and you realize mm-hmm. that you don't tell them anything, you just expect them to obey, and you don't always give them reasons for why you're saying yes or more often no to things. I mean, mm-hmm. I had sworn I wasn't going to be one of those mothers who said, because I said so, but then of course I did. Of course I said because I said so, because every mother has said because
that's
I said
right.
so, because that's what mothers do. So one of the things that I noticed was that we were always arguing over things like watching TV on a school night, because I didn't allow much of that, or having a candy bar. You know, if you're at the grocery store, mm-hmm. they always put the candy right at the eye level of the kid, right? like the Skittles are two and a half feet off the ground where the kid's eyes are, you know? And so I hated saying no all the time and having arguments. So I said, you know, I occasionally will say yes. Let me figure out how often I say yes to each of these special privileges over the course of a year, and I'm going to make the kids coupon books. Mm-hmm. And so I started giving them coupon books each Christmas. And so the coupons would be something like I'd give them one coupon a year for a shopping spree at the mall. Now, really, I had to take them shopping anyway. So this was just a way of making it into an event. Or I gave them two coupons for a day with mom doing anything you want. So if the kid wanted to play Monopoly all day, I sat on the floor, we played Monopoly all day. The kid wanted to go to a park, we did that. You know, whatever the child wanted to do. I gave them two coupons for have a party for whatever reason you want. And we would do that anyway. Like my daughter would celebrate her stuffed animals' birthdays, and we would make mm-hmm. a whole party with cupcakes and invite people over and have balloons and everything. I had coupons for double your allowance this week. I had four coupons a year for get candy while shopping with mom. Now, that's pretty cool. Only four times a year I had to say yes mm-hmm. when they wanted me to buy them a candy bar at the store. Four times a year, that's nothing. But we never had another argument about it because they knew that they could give me a coupon and get the candy. And so they would budget that over the course of the whole year. Mm-hmm. I had 12 coupons for watch 1 hour of TV on a school night. 12 hours, an entire year. But they were happy. There were never arguments again about watching TV on a school night. They would present a coupon. I had coupons for stay up 1 hour past bedtime. And, again, no arguments. They got 12 of those a year. I am sure that if I hadn't given them the coupons, they would have stayed up 1 hour past bedtime way more than 12 times
yeah.
a year. So
yeah.
the kids ended up eating less candy, getting less privileges, watching less TV, staying up past bedtime less often, and yet they felt they were totally in control because they had these coupons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the story because I'm looking at it from a standpoint of you are teaching them how to manage themselves in some ways without them actually really knowing it in so many ways, because as a human being, we go through a process from a child's perspective. We go through a process of being taught how to manage ourselves. And then from a parent perspective, we go through the process of being a teacher, a coach, a counselor, and so forth. This is a perfect way of basically teaching the children responsibility and how to actually manage themselves.
And I gave them control over the little things that don't matter. Because honestly, all the moms out there, does it really matter if your kid stays up 1 hour past bedtime?
Right.
It really doesn't matter. This is such a tiny little thing. And giving them the control over that made them feel good. And then we weren't having fights over the really important things like, you know, not taking drugs, you know, or doing your homework, things like that. And then there was a corollary to that, another story that I put in the sharing good advice section. The story is called Too Bad You Lost Your Jacket. And this is in the same vein. This, again, was giving the children responsibility much earlier than children usually get responsibility for a clothing budget. And it happened because my kids went to a private school and my son had to wear a, you know, a navy blazer. So I bought him a navy blue blazer at the beginning of the year. It was like $100, and, you know, I wanted it to last the whole year. So I bought it a tiny bit too big for him so that it would make it through a whole year. And he came back from school the first week wearing some other ratty old jacket. And I said, what happened to your brand new jacket? And he said, well, I gave it to Gideon because his was a little small on him and mine fit him really well, so we traded. So now the brand new jacket that was going to last all year was gone, and we had this ratty old jacket. And so that's when I decided I was going to give the kids responsibility for their own clothing budget. And the reason I thought of it was because I had taken the kids to Disney World every year because I was just such a huge Disney fan. And they were always trying to get me to buy them souvenirs, especially my daughter who loves stuffed animals. I would try to block her view of the stuffed animals. And then I discovered Disney had something called Disney Dollars. And so I gave each kid 50 Disney Dollars to spend on, you know, a one-week vacation. And then they started acting like they worked for Consumer Reports. You know, every possible purchase was evaluated. And neither of them spent the 50 Disney Dollars that I gave them. So I did the same thing with clothing. I gave my daughter a debit card, and my son wanted his money put in a savings account. And from then on, I would take them shopping, but they would pull out their own money or their own debit card to pay for the clothes. And then when they lost something, I didn't care. Plus, they tended to lose things a lot less often now because it was coming out of their budget if they had to buy a replacement. So it worked out really well. I mean, Dear Abby had said, if you want children to keep their feet on the ground, put some responsibility on their shoulders. And I actually gave my kid the responsibility for what they wore on their shoulders, literally. And my kids are both saying they're going to do the same thing when they have kids.
Right, right. Those are wonderful strategies, though. I mean, when I read that, I thought, wow, this is something that I'm sure moms have thought about it, but then for whatever reason, they may be holding back in terms of actually implementing it. And so having you share the success of the things that you have done, I would hope will motivate them to execute this same concept.
It was definitely good. I remember one time my son blew his clothing budget. He went to Ralph Lauren, and he bought expensive Ralph Lauren clothing. And I didn't say anything. I just said, okay, so I guess you spent your budget on, you know, three pairs of shorts.
Yeah.
And then he realized, and he had me take him back to Ralph Lauren to return them. And I didn't say, I wasn't upset that I had to drive him quite a long distance to find a Ralph Lauren store to return them. We did it because it was a wonderful lesson for him, and he still remembers it to this day. He remembers the time he blew the whole budget at Ralph Lauren and then had to return everything.
So interesting. The next chapter, laughing after the fact. And, of course, things happen during the moment that it happened is never funny, but after the fact sure is. The first story that I chose is The Meltdown by Beth Andrews.
Yeah, this is good. I guess every mother has at least one kid who has a lot of temper tantrums. I know that I did. So Beth says that her daughter has never been what you would consider an easygoing child, and she would have temper tantrums all the time. So one day, Beth picked her up at nursery school, brought her home, and or they weren't home yet. They stopped, and her daughter was having a temper tantrum, and then her daughter opened the car door and dashed away, screaming at the top of her lungs, and there happened to be a policeman driving by, so he stopped because he wanted to make sure this wasn't a kidnapping or something with this screaming child. And he came up to her, "Is that your child, ma'am?" And she said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, what is going on?" And she said, "Oh, nothing, officer. She's having a tantrum, and I'm trying to get her back into the car." And the police officer was a father, so he understood that her kid was just having a tantrum. She wasn't being kidnapped. And he walked across this field to this little 4-year-old girl, and the 4-year-old girl was horrified. And she stopped, and she stared, and she scooted back to the car quietly and climbed into the back seat and was utterly silent. And that night, Beth's husband asked how their day had been, and her daughter looked at her like, "Oh, my gosh, don't tell Dad, don't tell Dad." And so Beth said to her husband, "Oh, nothing unusual happened." So it was pretty funny. And I'm sure that's a story that her daughter now remembers and laughs about also.
I chose that story because it reminded me about what happened to me, almost in the same situation, but it's flipped the other way around. This story, actually, it makes a lot of sense. When you read the story, there is a fear from the parent's side, because thinking, wait a minute now, what if the kid decides to act really funny? She might be actually brought down to downtown because of the fact that she is a suspect and perhaps a kidnapping, which happens a lot these days. When I was growing up, what happened is that we have a neighborhood police officer that walks around the neighborhood, and whenever I'm like naughty, I would not listen to my mom would say, "I'm going to call so-and-so here. Remember that? He's a police officer. He's going to arrest you." And that took care of that real quick. And, of course, every so often, being a neighborhood cop, will come by, and if we're outside saying hello and stuff like that, right? So that's enough to kind of keep me in line, so to speak.
They say you shouldn't get your kids – you shouldn't make your kids be afraid of the cops.
Right.
Because – my daughter one time, she and my son went across the street to the neighbor's house, and then I went to get her back. She was only three, and she wasn't there anymore.
Yeah.
I looked everywhere in that house. She wasn't there. She wasn't in my house.
Yeah.
I couldn't find her anywhere, so I called the police and said my three-year-old was missing, and they sent 5 cop cars over because they take this very seriously.
Right.
And then my neighbor, like halfway down the street, called me and said, "I just saw 5 cop cars going by. Are you by any chance looking for your daughter who's sitting here coloring and told me that you said that she could come here?" I said, "Oh, my gosh." So then I went and got her. And I said to the cops, like, "Okay, do you want to talk to her?" And they said, "No, we don't want to talk to her because we don't want her to be afraid police officers.
Yeah.
We don't want her to ever feel like she's going to get in trouble if she goes and tells a police officer that, you know, that she's done something bad or that she needs help or whatever." Of course, I was worried I was going to get in trouble for losing my 3-year-old, but they were nice about it. I didn't get hauled in anywhere or anything. I was very embarrassed.
That's interesting. Something like that happened to me, but I'm going to save it until after this next story. Laughing After the Fact section again. Where's Roger by Pamela Hemerson Camel?
Yeah, so this makes me think that maybe every mom has a story about losing a kid at some point. And you're absolutely panic-stricken. And this poor mom, she lost her kindergartner. She was a single mom. She lived in an apartment. And she told him that he could go to the park after they got their errands done. They got home. He wanted to go to the park right away. She said, "Oh, I have to change the baby, and then we'll go." And all of a sudden, she couldn't find Roger, her son. And he was in kindergarten, so he was a pretty big kid. And she searched everywhere. She called for him. She went outside looking for him. She was panic-stricken. She finally called 911 and, like alerted them that this 5-year-old was missing. And then she finally, for some reason, decided to look under the couch or behind the couch, and he was sleeping behind the couch, and he was so exhausted that even though she had been calling him really loudly, he hadn't woken up. And so then she had to tell the police, it's okay, I found him. And she said it was the longest 15 minutes of her life because, yeah, if you're missing a child for even 1 minute, you're panic-stricken. I mean, everything changes. There's going to be a before and an after. So anyway, that was her story.
Yeah, but it's amazing.
What happened to you?
Well, for me, what happened was we live in like a subdivision where, you know, you have houses across one another and so forth. And I was right across the street in my friend's house playing because I thought I told my mom I left and went over right next door to play. And for some reason, she thought that I went missing. And the whole neighborhood was looking for me. And here, an hour later, I was walking out the front door from my friend's place and say, hi, bye. And then, like, everybody's looking at me. All of a sudden, like, I appeared from nowhere.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God. And, of course, needless to say, I got a big, big, big lecture, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, remember giving my daughter a big lecture also.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
During that time, it so happens that there has been rumors about baby boys being kidnapped. From a parent's perspective, that certainly echoed big, huge in their minds, you know, like what happened to my son here.
Yeah.
I guess every parent has gone through stuff like this. And that's one thing I love about this book. In reading this, it rekindles the things that I went through in my life. And that's why I think people should just read this book and have fun. And looking back, of course, hindsight is always funny.
Yeah, it is. It is. And this book definitely makes you realize that other parents and children have gone through the exact same things as you. It really is a fun read, and it will remind you of a lot of your own funny stories. And that's what happened to our whole editorial staff as we worked on this book. We kept telling each other stories that we were being reminded of by reading the stories that were submitted. We had thousands of stories submitted for this book, and we only could publish 101.
Yeah.
So we had a very good time reading all of them.
The next section is handling housework hassles. You have a wonderful story as well. It doesn't have to be perfect.
Yeah, so this is one of my mantras, I would say. It doesn't have to be perfect. I apply this to everything in my life because basically you cannot do everything 100%. If you're trying to do more than one thing, you cannot do everything 100%, right? You just can't. And so you have to just do the best that you can and realize that even if you do everything at 90%, that is a huge success. And so early on, I accepted my lot in life and that everything wasn't going to be perfect. And so the area where I gave in, and again, it was an area of letting the kids have control where it really didn't matter, was the children's rooms. Because why does it matter if your kid's room is neat? As long as your kid doesn't impose his messiness on the rest of the house, why does it matter? So the rule in my house was that the kids could not mess up even one tiny thing in the rest of the house. They couldn't leave their sneakers on the floor in the kitchen. They couldn't leave a piece of paper behind. Any area that was a common area had to be pristine because everybody was sharing that. But in their own rooms, if they wanted to throw everything on the floor, that was fine. If they wanted to never make their bed, that was fine. The rule I did have, though, was that there was no laundry service unless the laundry was in the hamper. If the laundry was sitting in front of the hamper, it was invisible to me. Only laundry that was in the hamper got done, and I had to be able to walk to the hamper without tripping. Because sometimes the entire floor was covered, right? I mean, it was hazardous walking through there. But that was my rule, that the rest of the house had to be perfect, and I would just close the door to their room when I was giving, you know, a house tour to friends or whatever, and it was fine. And the fact is that my kids, the moment that they moved out and they had their own places, even their dorm rooms, they were very nice and neat, you know. So the moment that it really mattered and it was their own place, they were neat, and I didn't care what they did in their rooms. It just didn't matter to me. And boy, did that cut out a lot of potential fighting. And yet they still ended up being very tidy and neat people.
That's wonderful. giving them the freedom.
Yeah, I really chose my battles.
I
chose my battles raising them. I really think it's the right thing to do.
The next one is really interesting as well, in the same category, The Art of Delegation by Debbie Etlin.
Yeah, so Debbie is a very regular contributor of ours. We love her stuff. And she talks about how she was doing everything. You know, she was working full-time, and then she was doing almost all the housework and the cooking and the laundry and the errands, plus driving kids around. And she said, you know what, if I can work all day, everybody else is going to have to pitch in too. And so she did it in two phases. First, she sat down and she listed all the housework that needed to be done, and she started delegating it, and she told the kids they were going to start doing their own laundry. I never did that, but it's a very, very cool idea. And so they each got a day to do their laundry so they weren't on top of each other in the laundry room. And then after they got used to doing their own laundry, which went very well, then she said, okay, now we're dividing kitchen duties. And each person was required to pick one night a week to cook and clean the kitchen. And they ended up having a great time. And she said the end result was a much more relaxed household. And the fact that they were cooking together really changed the life of her family. Mm-hmm. She said that it created a special bond between her and her husband and the children. And they started making new recipes together. They would chat and joke as they would work in the kitchen. They created new family recipes to be handed down. The kids tried old family recipes that had been passed down from their grandparents.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so it ended up being a really wonderful thing, having the kids and her husband do more of the work, and they all enjoyed it and benefited from it.
The kitchen is the heart of every home.
That's right. In your mama's kitchen.
The next section is listening from the kids, and this is a wonderful story. I know you talked a little bit about this in your intro. It's a beautiful story. Building Sandcastles That Last by Diane Stock.
So the lesson from this is when you're a mom and you're doing the laundry and you're doing the cleaning and you're doing the grocery shopping and all of those things that you do that are a lot of work, you have to do them again 3 days later or 5 days later. You're always doing them over and over again. And this woman who has a lot of kids was making sandcastles at the beach with one of her kids, and he kept putting the sandcastles right where the waves would destroy them. But he refused to move them. He wanted the waves to keep destroying them, and he would put all this care into the sandcastles, and the waves would destroy them, and then he would make the sandcastle all over again. And she started thinking, huh, that's like all the housework I do, where I work so hard to cook a meal, and they eat it in 10 minutes, and I work so hard to do the laundry, and they get it messy in 10 minutes. And then she said, well, it's like making the sandcastles. The joy is in doing it, and it's okay that I have to keep doing it over and over again. And it really changed the way she viewed all of her work as a mother.
The next one is the wonderful section, because there's so many women out there, whether they're single parent that is or married, they have to juggle a career. And Beth would have a wonderful story about creative thinking. So please share that with us.
Yes, so Beth Wood got divorced, and then she had to go back to work because she needed the money, and she was, you know, a single parent going through a divorce and working, and it was really hard, and she was just exhausted all the time. And one night, she just sat down on the bathroom floor and cried because her kids were doing poorly in school. She was forgetting to sign their permission slips. She was forgetting to pack their lunches and thaw food for dinner. She was out of shape, tired. She was getting impatient and yelling at her kids, and it was just too much. She couldn't do it all because you can't do it all. You just can't. And so she got kind of lucky because where she worked, they were cutting back because it was the recession, and the boss wanted them to cut back to four-day weeks. And so she made a deal with her boss that she would still work 5 days a week, but she would take 2 hours off. She would come home 2 hours earlier each day, and that way she could be with her kids after school, and it changed everything for her, having those extra 2 hours. And you know, nobody had thought of that. She had to employ a little creative thinking to make that deal with her boss. And so the point is, you do have to be creative. I remember when my kids were super young, I went back to work, but I only worked 3 days a week. Mm-hmm. And I know most people will say, oh, well, that's Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Uh-uh. I made it Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday because mm-hmm. that meant I never had a Sunday night when I had to think about going to work on Monday. It was so great having my Sunday remain untouched, and Monday night became Sunday night, which was much better. You know, so you just do whatever works for you and will create the least amount of stress for you.
Right. See, what happened to you now? You're working 7 days a week.
I know, but you know what? I didn't start doing that until I turned 50 and became an empty nester, and that's when we bought Chicken Soup for the Soul, and that's when I started working so hard. But I would not be doing this if I still had the kids at home. No way.
Thank you for doing what you're doing. I think you have impacted so many lives out there, and you are spiritual guided to do that. So thank you.
Well, thanks. It's been my pleasure. I know what you're going to ask me about next. My story in the feeling guilty chapter, because it's all about this issue of moms feeling like they can't do it all. Okay, I worked only 2.5 years outside my house. All the other years, even though I was working full-time, I did it from home. And those 2.5 years when I actually commuted into New York City an hour each way, I thought I was an awful mom during those 2.5 years. And so, I mean, I had always been the class mom, the team mom. I'd always driven on the field trips. I had signed up for everything. And then for those 2.5 years, I didn't drive on a single field trip. I wasn't class mom. I just had to drop everything. There was no way that I could do those things. And I felt very disconnected from the kids' activities and what was going on at school. And then after 2.5 years, I stopped doing that, and I resumed working from home and got back to my normal team mom, class mom self. But it was interesting. A few years after those 2.5 years, my kids started telling me about the field trips I had driven them on during those years. And I went and checked my calendar. I absolutely had not driven on any field trips, but I had been so good prior to those 2.5 years and so good after that I got credit. They just kind of averaged it all together and mushed it together in their memory. And as far as my kids are concerned, I always did things for them throughout the time they were in school. And that's why I called my story coasting, because I was coasting on my good reputation.
Wonderful story. The final section, which is very, very interesting, slowing down. Actually, this is the last story in the book, Seeking Serenity by Lisa Paula.
Yeah, and I ended the book with this story because I thought it was very important, because we all feel like we need to squeeze stuff in. Like, you know, you drop the kids off at sports practice, well, you go to the grocery store for that hour, or you go do something else, or you make the phone calls you needed to make. And this woman, Lisa, had always operated that way. And then she said, you know what, I'm just going to sit and watch swim practice. She had two boys swimming, and it's almost like meditation. And so she decided she would just sit there for an hour and watch them at swim practice every single time instead of running off and doing her errands. And she was the only parent who stayed around. And she said it was really good for her. She was finding what she said. She found peace in the eye of the hurricane. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I could make myself do that. I think that would kill me. I'd have to be multitasking. But that's what worked for her. You know, that's the nice thing about having 101 stories in this book. There's going to be something that works for everyone and changes the way they run their life.
Mm-hmm. What I like about the story is that sometimes when we're multitasking, that we're not in the present moment because our mind is always wandering elsewhere. What that story does is that, now, she may not be doing this all the time, but certainly there's certain specific moment, even though I'm just sitting there watching my kids, I'm in the present moment, and then you start to appreciate what you have right in front of you.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. It was very good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is the best advice given to mom in the book?
I guess if I had to boil it down to just one thing, it would be to make sure to pay attention to your kids. We had a great story from a woman named Mariah Morin who realized that she was so busy being a mom that she had gotten too busy to actually be a mom. and she wasn't paying enough attention to her young son. She was doing for everybody and forgetting her own child, and so she started canceling things, and she instituted something with her son called special hour, where a few times a week they would have special hour where she wouldn't answer her phone, she wouldn't look at her email, she would focus just on him for that 1 hour. And he absolutely loved it. And I think that's the thing that kids want the most is attention.
Mm-hmm. Well, kids live in the present moment, and parents doesn't always do that.
Your kid would rather play Monopoly with you for an hour than have a clean house.
Right. What are some of the funny mom stories you like in the book?
There was one story that I thought was really cute. I mean, there were a lot of great funny ones, but mm-hmm. this one, this mom was selling her home, and all of a sudden, some people who had looked at her home who were hot prospects wanted to come back, and they were coming in 30 minutes, and she had just been baking with her four children, mm-hmm. so her house was a mess, and there was no way she could clean it all up in 30 minutes, but she really wanted to sell her house to these people, and so she ended up grabbing every single thing, dirty dishes, toys, half-baked things, everything, and she threw it in her minivan in the garage and closed the door. And it worked, and they went to contract on the house the next day.
That's wonderful. Do you have a mom disaster story you'd like to share?
Thinking back on some funny but mm-hmm. perchance disastrous things. I'm remembering a time when, this is when I was being that good mom who drove on every field trip, and there was a field trip to the local amusement park for the whole chorus, and there were probably 150 kids in the chorus. And I think this was during the middle school years. And I don't know what was in the mind of this chorus teacher. I think she hated me. But there were all these big, strong dads who were being given like four nice little girls to take care of at the amusement park. I got the 10 worst behaved boys in the chorus, including my own son. These were the kids who horsed around and everything. I had to watch 10 middle school boys at an amusement park and try to keep them from getting lost. And one of them was on crutches. And so I had to keep staying with him mm-hmm. while the other ones kept running around. It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. So the first thing that happened was they said, what are we supposed to call you? Because I used my maiden name, then I was remarried, and then my son had a different last name. So I decided attitude is everything. So I said, you may call me the supreme ruler of everything. So all day long they would say, supreme ruler of everything, can we go to the, you know, roller coaster or whatever? So I figured it was a little attitude adjustment. Somehow I got through that day, didn't lose any of those boys, didn't injure any of the other ones, kept the kid on crutches, you know, with the group. But it was one of the most stressful things I've ever done.
Sounds like you have fun, though.
It was tough. It was really tough.
That brings me to this question. Do you have any advice for moms trying to find their work-life balance?
Settle for 90%. You'll never be able to do everything 100%. Settle for 90%. 90% is amazing.
Wonderful. Where can listeners find out more about Chicken Soup's The Multitasking Mom's Survival Guide?
So you can go to our website, which is chickensoup.com. And by the way, we have a brand new website that is really cool.
I love it.
And has all kinds of great features. You can read some stories for free. You can get tips from all our books. Go to chickensoup.com. And then, of course, this book is sold, you know, every place. So wherever books are sold, you can get this, including, of course, at Barnes & Noble and on Amazon.
Wonderful. What's next for Chicken Soup?
We've redesigned our line of pet food, and that's going really, really well. We're participating in a big show in Las Vegas right now where we're showing off all of our new pet food. We have our line of wonderful, delicious, easy-to-make food for people out there. We're working on our major motion picture. Gosh, what else is going on? Oh, PBS special. We're going to be on PBS all over the United States in August of 2014, and I will be one of the co-hosts of that show. So we're extremely busy right now.
I'm so excited for you guys, and you will be back next month when you talk about pets.
Yes.
You'll be coming back for Dogs and Cats.
Wonderful new books
month.
About dogs and cats. I'm excited to come back and talk to you about that.
Wonderful. As you know, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, I have 5 tips from this Multitasking Moms book, but I think these tips apply to life in general, no matter what you're doing. Tip number 1, don't forget your me time. Tip number 2, remember why you're doing what you're doing, whether it's being a mom or being a teacher or being a radio host or whatever it is. Remember why you chose that occupation. 3, remember to laugh because even tragedy can be funny. 4, look for those creative solutions because they're always there. Just think outside the box. And 5, you're never too busy to have quality time with the people you love.
That's totally awesome, Amy. As usual, you always have some wonderful recipes for living. This is just a wonderful way to sign off for today. Thank you again, and thank you for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio.
Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you again in a month.
To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. I hope you have enjoyed the pre-recorded interview with Amy Newmark. Please join me in 2 weeks on Tuesday morning, August 5th. My guest will be author and travel writer Peggy Henson. Peggy and I will be discussing her latest novel, Deadline Yemen. The book is the 2nd in her Deadline Mystery series. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to fmmktalkradio.com. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week.